We are in the midst of football season. So we are in the middle of a time where many children will watch games. Many will look for heroes and take special note of those game-saving plays so that they can then try to emulate some of that. They will look for players whose numbers they can wear on their jersey so that they can imagine themselves making the big play that saves the game. At least that's what I remember imagining. But I wonder if any of those children ever noticed something else during the game. That moment when the camera follows the ball as it goes through the uprights on the game-winning field goal, a few rows back, where a man with a purple and green wig frantically waves a sign that says, John 3:16. And I know many of football's youngest fans will not know what that sign means. They may think that John is a player or a coach, but miss the fact that John plays on an entirely different team. John 3:16 is a scripture which says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that so whoever believes in him shall not perish." I suspect that most younger fans will completely miss the reference, misunderstanding the real question that is being asked. Are you saved? Show of hands, how many people have been asked that question? How many people have been asked that question this week? I have lived places in the South where upon being asked that question, everybody in the congregation would raise their hand. Are you saved? It's hard to explain the power and the passion behind that question to people who aren't really from the South. They just don't get it. People from other places haven't experienced the ways in which football and religion are interchangeable in life. But a few years ago, I saw something that helped me understand a way to translate that Southern question so that non-Southerners could really understand. And it came, actually, from a TV promotion leading up to the 2006 Super Bowl. And some will remember the person that they featured, a man by the name of Bill Cowher, who was the head coach of one of the teams playing in that Super Bowl, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, Bill Cowher is famous for throwing tirades in front of his players and trying to get them fired up, especially when he thinks that the game is on the line. And what he would do is he would get in their face and he would stick out his chin and then he would scowl at them and then he'd yell and spit would fly. And then they showed one scene where he was chewing out one of his players who missed an assignment and let the other team score. And Cowher screamed out the name of this player and came face to face with this player and yelled, "Are you even playing in the same game as the rest of us?" When you see that guy waving the sign that says John 3:16, even though he may not scowl or yell or spit, he is essentially asking that same question. Are you even playing in the same game as the rest of us? But the person who really first helped me understand the religious translation of Cowher's statement was a petite Southern grandmother who probably never watched a football game in her life. She and I found ourselves one Saturday afternoon at the same wedding, one that I had just officiated. And her eyes were cast down as we walked through the buffet line on opposite side, and she looked up over the three bean salad and told me that my service was interesting. And then very politely and demurely, she asked, if I had been saved. But it was her tone that let me know that what she really wanted to know is, are you even playing in the same game as the rest of us? And I replied, much like our colleague Chris Bice, saying, yes, I am definitely saved. And she smiled again, a smile that registered about 2 on the sincerity meter. And then she said, bless your heart. She didn't believe me. How could she believe me? My answer was so much more personal than any piece of scripture could convey. I couldn't explain that it was not Jesus who saved me exactly, that my salvation was found in places that no one would mistake for a church, that it didn't come from water or holy wine, but from real human hands and real people's faces. The look on her face made it clear that she didn't recognize the salvation that I had found or the salvation that I had to offer. At that moment, I recalled an experience I'd had a year before when I was chaplain at Toronto General Hospital. While I was on call, I was summoned to the maternity ward. A baby had been born a few days earlier who would not eat and was not gaining weight, and a very anxious grandmother was asking me to come quickly, hoping that I could baptize her baby to save her. Oh, by the way, she asked, what religion are you? Unitarian Universalist, I replied. And there was a long silence on the other end of the phone. Oh, she said, well, come anyway. I got there 20 minutes later to find the baby's mother and all of the nurses in the maternity ward in hysterics. The grandmother had taken the infant child out of the hospital down to the nearest church, the church where that grandmother had been raised, the church that she knew saved lives. And she believed that her grandmother was struggling and that a priest's words and holy water would save her. We were all extraordinarily thankful when the baby was returned in good health, but the question of whether that baby was saved stays with me to this day. We call it by different names. We believe that it comes about by different means, but I understand what that grandmother wanted for her grandmother was the same thing that I wanted as a child, and that millions of other children want every day. A chance to be saved, a chance to play in the same game as everyone else. Were you saved? In the earliest moments of your life, did someone come in the dead of night to make sure that you had everything you needed? Made sure that you were held, that you were loved, that you were blessed, that you were surrounded by people who noticed and cared? Were you saved? Because a lot of children aren't. The next time I remember being asked that question was when it was posed to me by President of the Children's Defense Fund, Marion Wright Edelman. I was at the Atlanta Interfaith Children's Prayer Breakfast in a room filled with religious and social leaders, and when she got up and asked all of us, "Are you saved?" the response was what you'd expect from a crowd of religious leaders. We all nodded and murmured affirmatively, but the question was not designed to summon self-congratulations. It was designed to lead into her next question, which asked whether that meant we were then part of communities that saved lives, because as she proceeded to point out, a lot of children aren't being saved. Did you know, she asked, that every day in America, 5 children or youth commit suicide. 9 children or youth are homicide victims. 180 are arrested for violent crimes. 367 are arrested for drug abuse. 1,310 are born without health insurance. 2,016 are born into homes where they face malnourishment and poverty. 2,543 public school students are corporally punished. And 7,883 children are reported abused or neglected every day in America. Being saved today, she explained, wasn't so much a matter of having faith and conducting ritual as it was a matter of sweat and muscle. It was not so much a matter of learning how to believe in salvation as a way of making salvation believable. I thought about the children that she cited in her statistics, and I realized that most of those children probably had parents and friends, even grandmothers, with a strong sense of faith and ritual. Many of them went to church. Many were sprinkled with holy water and raised in the sacraments, and I'm sure many of them were taught how to pray, but I don't think any one of those children could have been said to have been saved. Were you saved? Did someone at some point foresee the choices being made in your life or the ones that you were making and stop what they were doing to hold up some sort of sign? Were you part of a community that took time to mentor you or advise you through disappointments, to pick up the pieces when you had fallen, to make sure you got to play in the same game as everyone else? Were you saved? I know the struggle that many have with salvation, struggling to believe in it. Salvation is not easy, partly because we are taught to think of it as something way up here, when all the while the people who need it most often live way down here and go unnoticed. It is not often that you will meet a child who is seeking salvation fashioned from faith and ritual. Children actually have plenty of faith, and their own inner light burns brighter than most adults ever know. It is sweat and muscle that they are seeking, a chance to be noticed and included, a chance to play in the same game as everyone else. And ironically, that's exactly the kind of salvation that we in this denomination and this faith have to offer. Meg Riley, minister of the Church of the Larger Fellowship, believes it is our call, as you use, to offer this kind of salvation. And she talks about how it became clear to her while she was working in a shelter for abused and abandoned children under the age of 5. Watching these children, she says, who were learning what it means to be alive in some of the worst circumstances imaginable, I became deeply awed by the resilience and the wisdom of the human spirit. These children had already suffered more than anyone should have to suffer in a lifetime. They had never had a chance to know love that was not simultaneously interwoven with abuse or neglect. And yet I observed that within a week of good care, consistent expectations, and kind attention, almost all of them began to manifest vitality and curiosity and creativity. That is not to say that they were healed, but that they visibly and quickly grew towards any light that was offered to them. It was Meg's story that came to mind while sitting at that interfaith prayer breakfast that early September morning, while I listened to Marion Wright Edelman point out over and over how our children, and not just children in our poorer areas, but children everywhere, are craving for opportunities to have real heroes, to be included in real dreams, to play in the same game as everyone else, to believe in what it really means to be saved, and to believe that such a thing was possible for them. Children will always grow toward any light that is offered to them, but it must be offered to them. Meg continues, working at that shelter also helped me to see that there are limits to a child's resilience. One particular child broke my heart. Joey was 2.5 years old when I met him, outrageously defiant and perpetually acting out. He delighted me even when he exasperated the whole staff. He came to the shelter after his 15-year-old mother abandoned him in downtown Minneapolis because he was getting on her nerves. Within days of his arrival, the shelter began to work its magic, and his defiance was softened into energetic curiosity and limit testing. His mother, coming to visit, was delighted with this new change in him and wanted to take him back home. This was a common phenomenon at the shelter, and she did take him home. And within 48 hours, she once again abandoned him, leaving him alone at the mall to be picked up by the police. His lights came on when he came back to the shelter, but this time they were a little dimmer. After this horrific cycle had been repeated 3 more times, there was no more creativity or curiosity or acting out left. He was listless and depressed and uninterested in coming back to life again. A child will grow toward any light that is offered to him, but it must be offered. If it is not offered, or if it is repeatedly snuffed out, they eventually stop looking. A child will look up to and look out for heroes in only so many places and be sent away or turned away only so many times before they become unable to recognize salvation in terms of human hands or a person's face. There is a line beyond which everyone's life is hard to be redemptive, where it is hard to say, yes, I am definitely saved. A line beyond which they start believing in themselves as a statistic because they have become too accustomed to being treated like one. So I ask you again, are you saved? Were you rescued from danger? Delivered from evil, protected from harm? Were you shown any concrete ways to believe in salvation? The word for believe in Greek, as it is used in the New Testament, simply means to give one's heart to. And the word for salvation from the Hebrew Old Testament means to make wide or to make sufficient the road ahead. At its core, believing in salvation is not just about having a head in the clouds faith, and it's not just about muscle either. Real salvation is about what happens when we learn how to put faith and muscle together. It is what happens when we give our hearts over to making wide the road ahead. That was the message that we all took away from the prayer breakfast. When we, the clergy, got up from hearing Reverend Wright preach, we were charged up and we felt like we'd all been given and knew the good news. We all knew that we had it in us and had it to offer. What we didn't know is that we weren't the only ones who had been changed in that last hour. The world had been changed too. We walked out of that prayer breakfast into a world of turmoil. And it was a few minutes after 9 o'clock on that Monday morning when the doors opened and we marched out into the lobby, September 11th, 2001. Most of us never even made it to the front entrance of the hotel when we heard the news, when we saw the crowds gathering around the TV screens in the lobby. The promise that we were just made to feel part of felt now broken, just like our hearts. Confused and bewildered, we noticed some people filing back into the room that we had just left, and it was almost as full as it had been the hour before when we noticed the hotel staff and other guests also gathering in there. People who knew the same promise, felt the same brokenness, and came together because they wanted a salvation that was more than just words and ritual, but something that was built from having a real face to look into and real hands to hold on to. When I heard later that the people who flew those planes into the towers did so because, in part, they believed that they would be saved, I wondered if their defiance and desperation would have been lessened if they had been given, while they were still young, the flesh and blood salvation that comes from human commitment and human community and real love. There is a poem by Mary Oliver where she describes a dream, and in it she sees her father, who had been long deceased, who she had always wanted to love and forgive, but because he had grown up and all she knew about him was defiance and anger and his unavailability, she writes in the poem, "The door fell open and I knew his face, pathetic and hollow, with even the least of his dreams frozen inside him, now looking like a little boy, the meanness gone. And I greeted him and asked him into the house, and I lit the lamp and looked into his misty eyes, in which I at last saw what I had never been able to notice. I saw what love might have done had we dared to love in time." Were you saved? Did someone you admired or looked up to dare to love you in time? Did someone you know give their heart over to the task of making your road sufficiently wide? Were you saved? This last year and a quarter that I have come to be with you, I have seen those who walk through the doors of this church who need love. And I have also seen a salvific spirit and presence of the many hands and countless faces that have reached out to those people, trying to love them in time. Some may feel that Reverend Nancy epitomized the essence of how to do this, but I know that promise existed within you long before she came, and indeed, it is part of Unitarian Universalism at its core. It is a promise at the heart of all religion, a promise pinned upon the souls of all of us as we are born into this world. It is the promise behind your work with the food pantry and with Voice and your partnership with Acts. It is the promise you sing about on Sunday mornings, and it is the promise baked into every casserole you take to the sick and the elderly. It is the same kind of promise behind the play that prompted a team in Michigan to stop on the 1-yard line so that Keith Orr could come in and score the winning touchdown. It is the promise that brought the crowd to its feet and tears to other players' eyes. It is a promise which stands out like a new sign in the crowd, asking us more than "Are you saved?" but asking, who will save who? Is it the hand reaching down, or is it the hand reaching up? Living in a world where both are true will help us all work together to make that road sufficiently wide to the glory of life.